Hi, and welcome to the Cure Talks Cancer podcast. Each week we talk with patients, survivors, caregivers, advocates, or healthcare professionals and do what Cure does best, provide cancer updates, research, and education. When 13-year-old Yelena Colasurdo started experiencing intense headaches and nausea, a brain tumor was the last thing on her and mom Andrea's minds. Unfortunately, as they soon found out, it was in fact true, and Yelena had to begin treatment just at the beginning of the COVID-19 pandemic. This week, Yelena and Andrea join us to talk about what it was like facing cancer and a pandemic at the same time, and how they were excited to partner with St. Baldrick's to raise money for pediatric cancer research. When asked for advice for fellow patients like herself, Yelena has some words of wisdom that could apply to anyone. Take one day at a time, she says. Don't look forward too much. Just focus on the day and time you're already on.
So thanks for joining us today. Andrea, can you give us a bit of background on Yelena's diagnosis?
Sure. In January of this year, she was diagnosed with a glioma, which is a brain tumor. Hers happens to be located on her thalamus, so kind of on the upper part of her brain stem. She was showing some signs of nausea, vomiting, lethargy, and, was relatively a very healthy and fit child. And all of a sudden, out of nowhere, came these headaches and lethargy, and we ended up at the hospital and got a brain scan, and we found out that she had a mass in her brain that needed surgery. And later on, we did some molecular studying and genetic studying of it, and it is a malignant brain tumor with very specific markers, which is kind of the good news, bad news in cancer. Good news that there's something to be found. Bad news is there's not always the well-known treatment for some of these markers, and we're just kind of taking it day by day, and hopefully, you know, everything is going well, and her treatments will go well. And
so, Lena, what was it like? What were the symptoms leading up to this diagnosis? What were you feeling?
I had these terrible headaches, which I haven't had before. And at school, I would get them. I'd go to the nurse. She'd be like, "Drink more water." I drink a lot of water, and then I'd get some Tylenol or some ibuprofen. And then I told my parents every time I came home, "Man, I had some terrible headaches today." And they're like, "Okay, well, let's see. Drink more water and drink lots of water." But then it kept happening day after day after day. So I knew something was up, but I didn't know what. And then on a Friday or over the weekend, I just threw up everywhere. It was terrible. I got taken into the hospital, the emergency room. And then they did a brain scan, they did a CAT scan, and then we found it out. So then I had to stay at the hospital 3 weeks.
Mm-hmm. Wow. So Andrea, what was it like, you know, and this happened kind of before the pandemic started, but, you know, having all that happen at the same time as hearing the word cancer, I mean, what was that like?
Sure. I don't think anyone's really prepared to hear the term cancer, or your child has cancer, or there's a mass in your child's brain and she's going to need surgery, and then finding out that it's malignant and that there needs to be additional therapies, treatments for it. I think we were really fortunate that the initial diagnosis and the initial treatments, the surgery and everything happened prior to COVID. But once we started radiation and we started spending time in the hospital, we had to relocate a couple hundred miles from our house, and everything started just shutting down, and our lives were already in chaos with this diagnosis and all the unknowns that come with it. And then for COVID to happen, and then there were all these, you know, cities started shutting down. We were living in a hotel, which was pretty much a hotbed. We were in a major city. We were in Washington, D.C., which was a hotbed of potential hotbed for COVID cases and outbreaks. And everywhere we turned, we were kind of having to be hypervigilant and really aware of what was happening. And amidst all of that, we were feeling very trapped. We were either living in the hotel room or we were at a hospital for treatment. And there was nothing else really to do in between. All the national parks shut down and stores, you know, were, I think we all remember, the stores were wiped clean, the shelves were wiped clean, the pharmacies are out of Tylenol, like anything you can imagine that would go wrong. We felt that we were kind of in this epicenter of it. And to deal with cancer, where you have to be very, have a lot of precautions with health and cleanliness and things like that, top it off with COVID, where you then now are worried about people breathing on you, coughing on you, especially in the early days where there wasn't a lot of real good scientific data out there. And it was wear a mask, don't wear a mask. Don't breathe on people, coughing's okay, but don't sneeze, or whatever the case was. It was always kind of contradictory information. And we just kind of had to wing it the best we could with, you know, every day seemed to be a change in what was happening and how the public was reacting, how our officials were reacting, and as a family, how were we going to react to this, as well as, you know, our main priority was our daughter and her health.
Yeah. So Elena, what helped you stay brave through all that?
Just knowing that the medicine was helping and that I was getting help during this whole time. And also being close with a family member is very nice and comforting to not really go through this alone by myself. And a lot of my friends have helped.
That's nice. So then Andrea, did you know anything about brain tumors before this experience?
Yeah, that's kind of an interesting question because I happen to be a nurse by trade and my specialty was in neurosurgery. So I was accustomed to taking care of adult patients who had brain and spinal conditions, including cancer, tumors, et cetera, in the hospital setting, so post-surgical patients. So I was oddly familiar with brain tumors. And oddly familiar with the team of physicians that actually ended up operating on Yelena and taking care of her for those 3 weeks that we were in the hospital. It was a strange feeling to kind of know exactly who's going to be operating on your child and whose hands are going to kind of be in your child's brain. And I was hopeful that they would take extra care because, you know, we were kind of one of, you know, one of our own. So it's kind of an uncanny thing to have a neurosurgery nurse be part of, you know, have my child have brain cancer. And we'll just apologize for the yawning. Where her tumor is located on her thalamus affects kind of the sleep-wake cycle and some neurological response with yawning. It's not because she's tired or bored. It's because the tumor, just where it sits, kind of causes these very strange neurological responses sometimes.
That's okay. Don't worry about it. Andrea, what kind of challenges did you face while dealing with this journey, going through treatment and, you know, kind of also dealing with the pandemic? How did you handle any challenges that you guys ran into?
You know, I think the biggest challenge that we have run into, I think everyone's kind of going through a lot of challenges with COVID. And I think the biggest challenge we ran into personally as a family was that hospitals started shutting down. Therapy started shutting down. Physical therapy wasn't meeting in person. Occupational therapy wasn't meeting in person. And early on in March and April, they didn't really have a very good telemed program ready because I don't think anyone anticipated this was going to kind of continue on the way it did. But when the hospitals were kind of making changes to guarantee, I guess, safety for their patients and for their staff and families and things, is a lot of them went down to a policy of one visitor only. And that was one visitor only during appointments, during infusions, during treatments, during MRIs, during CAT scans, that only one parent could be with Yelena at a time. And that's a real challenge because during a time when you both, my husband and I both, wanted so desperately to be with her and spend as much time with her as possible, we basically had to kind of fight a little bit to see who was going to be there, who was going to ask the questions, who was going to listen to the doctor. I kind of got tagged to do that since I have a little bit of a medical background. But it doesn't make it any easier when you're getting results or getting news from physicians and your spouse is on speakerphone or on a Zoom call that's not working, or he's got questions that he doesn't think about till later, and trying to like reconvey all of this data has been was a real challenge. And although I understand the position of the hospitals, it's been a really, that's been a tough pill to swallow, I think, for a lot of family members of patients, regardless if they're pediatric patients. At least she got to have someone with her. I know some adult patients that are going through this that are going to their appointments alone. One thing we are very fortunate about is Children's Hospital, where she's receiving her immunotherapy, just recently started allowing two parents to be there. So this last visit we had, actually last week, both my husband and I got to be there, and it was a treat because those are some long days and you want to kind of swap out sometimes as a parent and give the other one an opportunity or a rest. But it was hopefully, fingers crossed, that that's the direction that hospitals are going, to where people can be with their loved ones during these uncertain treatments or uncertain times.
So now, are there any special precautions you guys have to take kind of in your day-to-day life as a result of going through treatment?
I think we're like a lot of people with tons of hand sanitizer and Clorox wipes. We have a go bag that has every kind of mask in it you can imagine. We've got surgical masks and N95s and cloth masks and masks to go over masks and filters to go in the mask. And we just try to use really just to be wise with where we go, who we're around, how often we're in public. We've got wipes, we wipe stuff down no matter where we go. We're kind of those people. We've all seen them. We're not so big on gloves. We'd rather just wash our hands, but we will definitely wipe stuff down, and you'll rarely see us unmasked unless we're at home. And I think that's the biggest key, is keeping her healthy so her immune system can attack this cancer like it's supposed to. And we just don't have time for any other illnesses and viruses to kind of invade our life at this point.
Right. You recently helped raise some money for St. Baldrick's to support pediatric cancer research by having a head shaving party. So how did you learn about that organization, and why would you say it's important to you?
So St. Baldrick's, I think I've known about them probably 10 or 20 years. I think everybody has heard of them at some point or seen a shaving event. And I remember, gosh, thinking, I don't even know how much money someone could pay me to shave all my hair off and be bald. And here we are 20 some odd years later, and I'm going, gosh, I'll shave it every day if that means that a penny gets raised for pediatric cancer research. I think what's so special and unique about St. Baldrick's in particular is that a lot of their money, and when I say a lot, a huge percentage of the money that they raise goes directly back to the doctors and the researchers and the institutions to help find cures, particularly specifically for pediatric cancer. And that's one of the things that now we are very passionate about as a family. And so my sister and I kind of got a wild bug and said, hey, let's shave our heads. And within 3 weeks, everything's virtual, but within 3 weeks we had an event planned, and we ended up raising about $7,500, and we had a lovely time. And so we're all sporting these very short hair crew cuts right now. But goodness, I'd do it 100 times over if it meant one more dollar went to research for kids cancer.
I bet you, Elena, I bet you're pretty proud of her. Yeah,
I am. Yes. It's so soft.
So then, Yelena, how would you say this experience has kind of shaped your life going through cancer?
I'm not really able to do stuff that I was to do before. Like, my left side is down because of where the tumor is located. So I can't really go and ride my bike, be like other kids my age right now. It's mainly just sitting at home, taking a walk some mornings. I'm trying to do it every morning so I can gain up the stamina, some step I can gain up the stamina so that I can do it longer and easier, I guess.
Yeah, that's a good goal. So then, Andrea, what kind of late effects? I mean, this is the effects that you're seeing right now because of treatment. But, you know, with pediatric cancer treatment, they often talk about how there's late effects later in life as a result of some treatments. Can you go into what you guys are learning about that right now?
Sure. So particularly with brain cancer, she did have 6 weeks of radiation therapy, which is great. Radiation helps, you know, deconstruct some of those cells that are growing. Unfortunately, the beam of radiation goes through a lot of healthy brain tissue to get to that tumor, especially hers is on her thalamus, so kind of deep in the midbrain. There's no easy way to get there. So some of the things to look out for as time goes on, cognitive delays, changes in her ability to learn, changes with personality can happen. It's, you know, that part of it is kind of disturbing just on the brain side of it. There's also hormonal changes and endocrine changes because we've been on steroids for so long, how that affects a prepubescent body. That's a big challenge. Puberty is tricky enough, and to be doing it while you're getting these strange treatments and medications all the time is really tricky. And then I think the statistics are like 95% of kids that battle cancer and have treatment for cancer at a young age will have some sort of secondary illness as they get older, maybe a secondary cancer that is not from the primary tumor, but a totally different tumor due to the treatments. There could be changes with infertility. There's just so many things, you know, that you're on the lookout for. And then all the things that are kind of current and happening right now, what are we looking for right now? You know, we're always kind of like cautious about headaches and nausea and vomiting and anything that could suggest increased brain pressure, anything that could suggest increased tumor growth or infiltration. So I feel like we're always just kind of creeping up to the door, looking and waiting to see, you know, the what's next. And it's a terrible way to live cancer-wise. So we try to just not live by the calendar and just live life. And just, unfortunately, we have to be vigilant and a little hyper-vigilant about some of these symptoms. But it is scary to think that these treatments, while they might be helping you in the short term, have these really devastating long-term effects.
What kind of advice would you have for other people, other parents in your situation? Parents and even just families that have loved ones who are going through cancer treatments right now, what kind of advice would you offer them?
I think our biggest advice is you're not alone. There are other families out there. There are other people out there. Even if you think your child's cancer is the rarest cancer out there and someone said, this is so, so rare. There's probably someone else out there that has it either in the location or the same malignancy or the same mutations and things like that. I would also suggest that they, you know, get in touch with support groups, either through the American Cancer Society. For us, the Pediatric Brain Tumor Foundation has been a big help. Talk to your doctors and your social workers and child life specialists and anybody you can talk to at the hospital. And then also with COVID, you know, find a small group of people that are on the same page as you are with staying healthy, wearing masks, that they're not exposing themselves or having any risky, you know, going to risky events, so that you can still have time to socialize with a group of people. You can still ask people to come over and help you do kind of the minutiae in life, and that you trust that they are, you know, taking care of themselves the same way that you and your family are. And it's so important to ask for help. And people want to help. They want to know how they can help people in your community, in your church, your family, your neighbors. Everybody wants to know how to help. And so if you can be very specific with what your needs are or what you want for a meal, if you sign up for a meal train, 50% of the meals are going to be spaghetti. So ask someone, say, hey, can you bring tacos? You know, we had some pasta the other night, but could you make tacos? Or I had your Frito salad at, you know, a potluck and I loved it. So can I have Frito salad? And people are very accommodating in a situation like this, number one. And number two, when you give them a specific task or a specific item, something that they can do for you, like we needed the oil change in the car. Can someone just go do that for us one day? They're much more willing to do it. And then they feel really appreciated because it's something really simple and sounds really stupid, but it's really easy to kind of help people. So families, you're not alone. It's scary. It's tricky. You know, look at blogs that are positive. Look at blogs that can help garner some additional information about therapies and treatments and things like that. And, you know, just be really hopeful. Don't live by a calendar. Choose to continue living life the best way you know how. And I think that those are the things that science can't really explain when it comes to success of battling cancer, is the will of the patient, therapies involved, prayer, family support, and things like that. You know, that they can tell you all the science and statistics, but there's a whole other side that nobody can really put their finger on. So live that part of your life too.
Also, just take one day at a time for each day. Don't look forward too much. Just focus on the day and time you already are. And that you're never alone. You always have people that are wanting and are going to help you.
Excellent. Well, thank you, ladies, so much again for taking the time out to speak with me.
Thank you so much.
Yes.
Don't forget to subscribe to the Cure Talks Cancer podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or other apps to hear every episode, or visit curetoday.com/podcasts. The Cure Talks Cancer podcast is the official podcast of Cure Magazine, the indispensable guide to every stage of the cancer experience. For more information, visit us at curetoday.com and find us on Twitter at @cure_magazine or Facebook at @curemagazine.